Hey everybody, welcome back to the Old History Project. Excuse me, the Old History Podcast. Sorry I didn't make a podcast last weekend. I've been busy with the other project, doing some research on it. It's a little time consuming because of I've got to go out there and do research, and then come home, do research, compare pictures, all that kind of thing. So I love doing it, but sometimes I just don't have time to make the podcast, and that's I'm sure that's quite all right. The other thing is, I was asked to go give a speech at the local Kiwanis Club. I don't know. I guess their theme this month is history. The Kiwanis Club, you know, they've done a lot. Not just for Hamblin County, but for just everywhere. I think in the past they donated books and stuff and helped children to become more literate. In the past, you know, was around here, the schools were pretty poor. Sometimes teachers, and I recall this is a story that was told to me by somebody that actually, that they told me this personally. So the teacher actually used to have to rent a room from them, and then she would use her salary to buy books and stuff for the kids. If that tells you anything. Anyway, I've been writing my speech and all that, so I'm going to make it at least 15, 20 minutes long. So as far as that all goes, I have some very exciting news. Let's see what I should know maybe in the next week or two for sure, but well, I'll be able to let you guys know in a week or two. I already know for sure. It's exciting news for the project, so stay tuned. I promise you I'll share it with you the second that I can. So one of the first the podcast, the theme for this podcast is going to be marble. I'm going to go ahead and make an end to the Civil War podcast, and I'll think of another subject I can make a lot of episodes about. So the theme for today's podcast is going to be the marble industry, the Tennessee marble industry. Before we get into that, I'd like to announce I'm going to be covering a new sponsor for the podcast here. It is from my good friend Michael Cook. He runs a barbecue making business called Sauce Squatch. SOSS Squatch. You can find it on Facebook. And let me tell you, man, that barbecue is the bomb diggity. Mr. Ripley, my old sponsor, has decided to end his social media presence as he has other things going on in his life, and that's very respectable. So the Beard Guy and Friends can no longer be found online. However, if you're native to Greene County, you can pick it up at Uppercuts Barbershop to still support my good friend Jason. So new sponsor, Sasquatch, the barbecue man, Mr. Michael Cook. Thank you if you're listening to my podcast. All right, so marble in East Tennessee. So marble, the onset of the marble industry up here in our nook of the world can directly be attributed to Gerard Troost, who was Tennessee's first state geologist, who first noticed the presence of the material in 1831 in a presentation to the Tennessee General Assembly. He had reported that it was far more beautiful than any other type of marble in the world, which honestly, that's true. If you've ever seen the actual pink Tennessee marble, even black Tennessee marble, it's you know, that's why it's so expensive. So anyway, by 1838, a fellow by the name of Orville Rice and S.D. Mitchell would open up the Rogersville Marble Co. and would become the first quarry in the state. His quarry, which has never been found to date, was somewhere along Caney Creek. Rice would also be a member of the Railroad Advocate Committee, whose goal was trying to bring the railroad through Rogersville. This idea would later tie in with the work of J.G. M. Ramsey, bringing the railroad to East Tennessee, namely the Charleston, Cincinnati, and Chicago Railroad. And I'll veer off here for just a minute. That railroad, the thought behind it was going to go from, I think, Atchison, North Carolina. Supposed to go right through the middle of Morristown. It was going to spur off and was supposed to go up in and touch into the marble industry. And then the rest of it was going to go up in through Kentucky and into Chicago somehow. And it was going to be the longest line in the continental United States if it had been completed. But the Civil War happened, and the company actually did get a lot of the line graded. They got it, I think, graded from Sevierville to, I think, somewhere outside of Dandridge. And when the Civil War happened, they burnt the bridges, destroyed the rail bedding that they had graded, and, well, the company couldn't recuperate from that. Well, they had to shut down. They would, another company would buy up the rights of the land from Morristown into Granger County, and that would be the Morristown Cumberland Gap and Ohio Railroad. But I'll make a podcast on that later. So anyway, Mr. Rice would build a grand three-story home made almost entirely of marble, and he would showcase it. He would use it to showcase the beauty of what he could produce. It had marble floors, marble doors, window sills, mantelpieces. Even the railing for the stairs was gilded with marble. By the 1850s, he found an even more superior quality of marble, and he would learn to produce marble mantels, marble center tables, side tables, bureau tops, marble vases. And anyway, this home was not the very first to use marble, as Swan Pond, aka the Ramsey House, which is the oldest stone house, and the The Swan Pond, aka the Ramsey House, and the old stone house in Blunt Co. had also been had marble used in them, but this would be the first to actually be built entirely of marble. But anyway, that that house actually would burn down later on. Which Rice's marble factory, which to date has never been found, along with his quarry. I have my own suspicions, but just based off of things that I found. But anyway, he used water-powered machinery, and he would employ at least six people to cut marble. The dark pink marble would gain national attention when the Washington Monument was being built, and as the Washington Monument Society had been created, it sent out a request to every single state wanting a stone from each to represent the nation's first president. So naturally, Rice and state architect William Strickland sent out sample stones, and upon seeing it, the governor had seen nothing similar in comparison to the dark pink marble, which would be declared the state stone. It was paid for by the state and sent up to D.C., where it would be engraved and polished with the saying, "The Federal Union must be preserved." No doubt a nod to Andy Jackson. But anyway, by the 1850s, Rice would begin to have competition from people like Andrew Galbraith, who owned the Galbraith Marble Quarry, which was down a little further in Hawkins County. As just to veer off here, the little former villages were called Galbraith Springs Marble Hall. Marble Hall is a little closer to Rogersville. Galbraith Springs is a little closer to Mooresburg. Anyway, by the 1870s, because the railroad at its closest could be across the river several miles away in Whitesburg, and would later cross the river in Bean Station by the 1880s, this would cause the Hawkins County marble industry to lose any sort of advantage it held, you know, for the last several years. Because, I mean, they had to cut the stone, lift it up, put it on a buggy, and then have a mule carry it across the river. They had to put it on the ferry, go to the other side, and then haul it to the train station in Whitesburg. And then, Coincidentally, they would have to go the other way, still cross the river, and go into Bean Station at that train station. So in the 1870s, as the 1880s, there was copper discovered in the hills of Virginia. And this would prompt Mr. Orville Rice, who had had lots of fortune in the mining industry. He would sell his quarry and buy up land in Virginia for prospecting in Virginia. A move that would be his downfall. Rice would not strike copper and he would go bankrupt. He lost the elegant marble mansion, all of his farms, and all of his wealth, and the huge lump of land would be sold in 1872 for about $10,000, which would be the equivalent of $220,000 today, I believe. Probably a little bit more. Probably more along the lines of $260,000 today. Anyway, the home would be burned down, I think in the 1920s or 1930s. And there was only one picture of Marble Hall that was ever taken. But back to marble. East Tennessee's infrastructure had suffered pretty greatly during the Civil War. As we all know, the armies would use whatever there was at their disposal for transportation. Like supplies and all that sort of thing. By the 1870s, the network of rail lines that had come out of Knoxville would prove to be a blessing for the Knoxville marble industry, as it was available to be transported directly to a rail car for travel north, south, east, or west. The marble industry in Hawkins County would suffer because of the great amount of work that was needed to put it on a cart and put it on a flatboat, and then go to Knoxville and Chattanooga, pick it back up off the flatboat, and put it on a rail car. This also made the marble more expensive from this area. The marble in Knoxville would be cheaper. And Knoxville also had quite a variety of competing marble mines to choose from, which made material from there more readily accessible. It would be from the Knoxville marble mines that the marble in the state capitol building would come from. So, hope you guys enjoyed this short podcast. No, it's not long. But I'll tell you what, I'll touch on something else too. There was another thing. This touches on how hard the area was hit in the Civil War. There was a little place over in Tellico called the Tellico Plains Mansion where the owner had an iron mine. I posted quite a bit about the Tellico Plains Mansion. It was torn down piece by piece and it's put in somebody's storage building somewhere, but the guy owned an iron mine, and when the Civil War came through, the troops went up there, they bombed it, they destroyed it. They destroyed it so efficiently that it could not be rebuilt. And the same thing happened in the Ducktown mines. This is when the soldiers came through there. They blew up one of the copper mines, but they was able to get it rebuilt. It actually shut down the copper industry down there for a couple of years until they could get the stuff rebuilt. So marble wasn't the only one that got hit, but this is a good example of what all happened. So nonetheless, everybody, sorry this is a shorter podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, you can subscribe to the podcast here right on Anchor. So thanks for listening. Stay tuned on the Facebook page for the news I'll be sending out. You guys will be excited. So thank you so much.